Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. It's always fun to be with you and share the mic with all my good friends here at the broadcast. Joe Farr, Alice Alvey, Andy Shell's out of the office again. We're not going to have him on the broadcast, but we got a full lineup. Very excited to have you be a part of this. And I just want to remind everybody again, this is created by mortgage professionals, produced by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals. So we have many people across the industry and outside the industry that listen into this broadcast, but this is a primary broadcast for the mortgage professionals. We welp a broadening audience of realtors and mortgage vendors to listen in. Love to have you be a part of it as well. So anyway, we're also very proud to be the recipients of the Innovation Award from Progress in Lending. Tony Garitano's on the line. We've got some questions for him a little bit later in the broadcast. We have a special group of listeners, literally some of the top mortgage professionals in the industry. I heard from one of them over the weekend. His name is Chris Bruner, and he's a national sales director of ACES Risk Management Corp in St. Louis. So, Chris, good to hear from you. Thanks for your comments. Any of you that listen to the broadcast, please give us a call shoot me an email. Most everyone does it through LinkedIn or Facebook. Doesn't matter how you get a hold of us. We look forward to hearing from you. And also, it's always fun to catch up with you at the conference. We'll talk about that a little bit later at the last conference Alice and I just spoke at. Let's get into what's going on. Let's first of all say a big thank you to our sponsors. We have, as our hot topic today, Glenn Corso of the Community Lenders, and as well as a new friend, James Brody. And they're going to be talking about what's going on out there when it comes to some of these state audits. Really interesting topic. And for those of you that are wondering, what is it like to go through a state audit? What are some of the things you're doing? Where are people slipping up, messing up? We've got the experts here, and I'm very excited to have them with us. Special thank you goes out to United Guaranty. Last year, FHA increased their annual MIP premium to 1.35% in addition to the upfront payment of 175 basis points. That means United Guaranty offers more savings in the short and long run. Here's some points to keep in mind when you're considering United Guaranty. And by the way, we're just so happy to have them as a sponsor of the broadcast. But their pricing is nearly always as competitive, if not cheaper, than FHA. Now, I added the cheaper part, but I know they're as competitive as FHA. But here's the other part of it. They can offer faster and less complicated closings because the company reduces the need for FHA appraisals. That can be an issue. It has been for some of you out there. We hear about it. And it's also easier for the seller to meet inspection requirements. Also, United Guaranty offers more premium payment choices, including single, monthly, and lender-paid options. And United Guaranty offers coverage on low down payment loans for, get this, second homes and condos. If you're not aware of these programs, check them out at their website, www.ugcorp.com, or get a hold of one of their salespeople. Now, we run across salespeople all the time. Susan King is one of my favorite people out there. I love all the folks at UG. I haven't met anyone out there I don't like. But at the Indiana State Mortgage Banking Conference this last week, sat down and met Maureen Mo Bauer, and I want to tell you, she and her boss, Susan, are sharp. Wow, what a dynamic duo those two make out to be, and Mo is something else. I just can only imagine how my life could have been easier if I had someone like Mo on my team as our representative for the mortgage insurance. So it's great to have them. Also, a big thank you goes out to Velma. Velma stands for a virtual electronic marketing assistant. They do all the email broadcasts for us, and we are pleased to be in partnership with them. They are a great group of folks. Without further ado, let's get into what's happening with the markets. Joe Farr, good to have you with us, as always. We got some housing data in today. That was kind of a pleasant surprise. So what else is there?
Well, today the housing data came in a little better than expected, and
caused MBS prices to fall a little bit. We're down about 3 to 4 30-seconds from early morning pricing before the
right.
existing home sales data came out. But it came out at 4.89 million, which was a 4% above the April measure and a good report.
Yeah, very good report. Encouraging.
Yeah.
Encouraging for the real estate. And it's good to know it's not impacting rates more than it is. That's the good news. Is,
right.
know, that that
right.
is not much of a blip.
Yeah, and rates they had a good week last week. You know, a bit of
no
a volatile
kidding.
Week. But all in all for the week, we were up about 40 basis points in price. Most
good.
Of that occurred after the Tuesday CPI report that came out. We had last week was all about inflation, Dave. The CPI report came out on Tuesday. It was higher than expected. Both the core and the headline CPI number are above 2% or at 2% or above. And as you know, that's the Fed sort of comfort level. And
right.
When that report came out, prices really fell pretty hard, about 40 basis
mm-hmm.
points. But since then, we've fully recovered that plus 40 to the upside. So the most of the improvement came following Wednesday's Fed meeting. Now, the
right.
Fed didn't say anything terribly different, meaning you know, the taper continues, Fed funds rate remained the same. The forecast for economic growth was lowered a little bit, and the forecast for long-term Fed funds rate were lowered a little bit. But the big surprise came again in the press conference when Yellen referred to the very same CPI number I was just talking about coming in higher than expected and showing a pretty steep rise from the last couple months. Janet Yellen dismissed that measure as
normal. Yeah.
And it was really quite surprising. The noise, as she said, caused them to not have a concern about inflation at the moment. It caused a little bit of concern in the mind of gold buyers because gold shot higher on the news, given that a lot
right.
of people disagree with Yellen on inflation, and gold, as you know, is an inflation protection. And so they drove the price of gold up about $50 an ounce. So it's an interesting time, given that the Fed sees very little concern, but I think the market is seeing a concern about the rise in prices. And then
yeah, even
it
though the
was,
stock market, there was a stock market, some of the Wall Street folks were also sounding this, going, we're not totally buying
exactly.
into what Jan, that was really interesting is some of the commentary. So this is the first time we're starting to see some real dissension. I mean, the market still loved what she said, and we saw that reflected, as you saw, an 80 basis point swing from the low to the bouncing higher. So, I mean, that was pretty
right,
significant.
Right, well, and then on Thursday, the Philly Fed came out, and the rally
yeah.
that had started on Wednesday after the Fed meeting had continued early Thursday until the Philly Fed came out, and it was stronger than expected. But one of the components of the Philly Fed is the prices paid component, which is a measure
right.
of inflation, and it too was higher than what people thought. So it'll be really interesting. And this week we have the core PCE coming out on Thursday, and that's going to be a very closely watched announcement. But so last week was a good week for mortgage rates. And, you know, for the week, they're up about 40 basis points. So
40. Up 40, but they're from the whole swing from the negative down 40. That's what I was referring to. Because
right,
then it go
right.
down 40, and then so there was yeah. a movement from the low to the high of 80. That's what I was referring
exactly.
to. Sorry for
exactly.
Confusing. Sorry for confusing anybody out there.
No, you said it right. So this week we have new home sales data coming out tomorrow. Durable orders on Wednesday, along with the final first quarter GDP. And then, like I said, on Thursday, the core PCE comes out along with personal income. And, again, that's going to create a lot of attention, as that is the preferred measure for inflation at the Fed. And if it starts running higher, it's been running about 50 basis points below what CPI runs. But
mm-hmm.
it also has been tracking CPI higher. So it may just be a little delayed, and eventually we'll catch up. But pay attention when it comes out on Thursday. Let me see what time it is. It's Thursday. at 8:30 Eastern time.
8:30 Eastern time, yeah. A lot of good information, and, of course, one of the things I like, I always ask you a question, and I'm sure others do, because when you track the markets, you get a certain question. So I always ask, you know, what's the general feeling? What, and I'll tell you what my impression is, Joe, and you can just shoot it down or say, no, that's plausible. But here's the deal. It seems like we're at the bottom of the market, and it's like, it's like, when do we move higher? We want to stay here as long as we can, but it seems like it feels like we may be near the bottom, and everyone's looking for the reason for it to go up, but they want to keep it as low as possible for a period of time. Sounds like the Feds want to keep it as low as possible for a period of time.
That's right.
With Janet Yellen's comments. So.
Well, and like the saying goes, you don't fight the Fed, and then you got the issues going on in Iraq, and that could create a fight to safety pretty quickly. And so, you know, there are a lot of positive things out there for the future mortgage rates. The most concerning, it looks like, is whether or not this inflation number is going to keep ticking higher.
Well, it'd be interesting if it does. This is the place to be looking for it. MBS Quote Line, folks, if you haven't checked it out, go to their website, www.mbsquoteline. Call Joe Farr at 512-637-1763. Great guy to know on this. Wonderful service. I tell you, I produce a video every day called Today's Mortgage Minute, and it's commenting on the markets, kind of what's going on. It's consumer-facing, not for the mortgage industry, but it's consumer-facing. And I use this service. It is so valuable, Joe. So much information on your website. Appreciate it so much.
Well, thank
you. Got Paul Mallow. It's good to have you with us. We got Paul Mallow online, and he's always out there loaded with some great information. Love to harass Paul, but we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Always good to have you with us, folks. And so many comments, even people shooting over some notes to me. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. We've got the infamous Paul Mallow on the line. I'm looking at his website right now.
Infamous.
You know, Paul,
what did
I got
I
a big
do?
News flash. I got a big news flash for you. I was in Indiana, and both Alice and I were. We did a joint session. I had people come up, and they go, "I love it when Paul's on. He's just a character." And this is someone who knew you, and this
There's
enjoys
no
your reading.
To
writing.
Me. I'm just here for your entertainment, David.
Well,
I'm not sure what to think of that.
It's substantive and entertaining, but I do have a news flash for you. Nothing is happening on the M&A front for at least a week. You know why?
Why?
Chuck Klein's on vacation.
Oh, actually, there's a deal that might be announced later this week, which we previewed on IMF News 2 weeks ago. We didn't name the parties, but it's a mid-sized California non-bank looking at a New England shop. It might be announced later this week, and if it is, we'll have it on our website, www.imfnews.com. But it may not be. But it's going to happen. It's just a matter of whether it's later this week or next week. So that's something to keep in mind. And I know you guys are working on a lot of stuff. I don't think you're party to this one, though.
We're not in this one.
I'm not sure everything
you're
working on. No, okay.
Yeah, we're not in this one. But it's good to hear your voice. So let's go through the website real quickly. We got a lot to cover today. But you got some good stuff up here. So let's run through it.
Sure. Interesting report, maybe not so interesting, but it's noteworthy that closing times are moving up a little bit. That's good news for both, you know, mortgage lenders as well as consumers. If it's a Fannie Freddie loan, it now takes about 43.7 days to close instead of 45.3. I think part of this is tied to the fact that maybe these guys are less busy these days and they could focus more on deals. Or also, you know, they've worked through the regulatory process and they're just getting better at closing. So either way, that's good. That's good news. We also have an item about Bayview. Bayview has been in this industry for a long time. They've done a lot of different things. They're down in Florida, Coral Gables. David Ortell, I believe, is still a principal in that shop. They've been buying non-performing loans. They've been buying servicing. And now they're getting in the business, or they've been in the business quietly for the last few months as correspondent buyer production. I talked to someone there this morning, Jeff Lemieux, a nice fella. They're now also buying non-QM loans, and they're putting them in portfolio.
It's a real small effort,
yeah. But it's going to be something to watch. I mean, we keep hearing about guys playing in the non-QM space. It's small. You know, what's that old saying? Necessity is the mother of invention. Fannie, Freddie,
yes.
FHA volume so small. Guys, I think they have to go in a non-QM to, make up a little bit for their volume. No one thinks non-QM is going to, fill the gap of the production drop this year, but it's nice to see shops are starting to, focus on that sector, and maybe we'll finally see some non-agency production. So last week we had a couple jumbo deals come to market, and that's nice too. Also on the website, banks have been reducing their first lien holdings, except for some of the big boys. Some of the bigger banks have actually increased their first lien holdings. A lot of this is tied to, Wells Fargo, JPM, Chase, and Union Bank, originating jumbo mortgages and putting them on their portfolio, I should say. Also on the website, SunTrust and Wells, there were some updates on their FHA cases. The SunTrust settlement was pretty large, almost $1 billion. But, there's talk from compliance attorneys that it's starting to spook the FHA market. I'm not sure I believe that, but it's something that's out there and people are starting to talk. We have a report from Mountain View on the reperforming loan market. That's, loans that were delinquent and that have been reworked and now are current. That market has been heating up, according to Mountain View. About $400 million in non-performing portfolios have traded the past few months, so that's interesting. We also have an update on the Ocwen Wells situation. Some people misunderstood what we wrote late on Friday about that deal moving forward. It's not moving forward per se, but we quoted some people from Compass Point who put out a statement about their meetings with management. It seems like something is going to happen. That deal has been out there for 6 months. It's been put on hold. Everything we hear that it's not dead by any means. Ocwen hasn't been given any updates, really. But whatever that was said in the Compass Point meetings, it looks like, they believe that in time this thing's going to get passed. This deal will happen. It's $39 billion MSRs. But, it's frustrating that there's no info on this thing. So we put something out there, and I think it got misconstrued. One thing we know is that, Ocwen is out there originating loans. They're trying to grow their portfolio. But Ocwen Nation, Sir and Walter, there's no large legacy deals going on right now that are getting completed. And it's all tied to New York State and Ben Lasky looking at these companies. And a lot of people are, sort of frustrated. You've been saying you're looking at these guys. Why don't you charge them already, with something?
Yeah, do something. Don't sit and leave the whole industry in limbo. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and their stock, all their stock prices, the three I just mentioned, have been socked around pretty good this year, trading much closer to their lows than their highs. So, and we also have an update. Lone Star bought a big non-performing portfolio from HUD. That broke late on Friday. And there's just, plenty there on the website. So that's all the highlights, David.
Good stuff. Folks, check it out, www.imfnews.com, stands for Industry Mortgage Finance News.com. And Paul and the team there, Brandon, Ivy, and, George Brooks is there. You got him on. John Bancroft, yeah, always love. Good team, great amount of good information, and it's all pertinent and relevant. And Paul just has a way of staying on top of it. Trust me, folks, he is up on our phones constantly. What's the latest on M&A? He calls. He is aggressive. Great place to be to get some information. Paul, thanks so much. Always fun to have you on the broadcast.
Thanks, sir.
And you do have a lot of fans out there that listen to the broadcast and go, I just love the way Paul's personality is so fun. And it comes through in your writing, but the people love hearing your voice. They put a voice
with
all the wit that goes into writing. All right. Talk to you soon. Appreciate you so much.
Thanks. Have a good week.
Bye-bye. It's YouTube, bud. Let's move over to our beloved Alice Alvey, who is backing me up. We had a thunderstorm roll through here just before the radio broadcast, knocked out internet, everything, phone lines, and we are back just before the broadcast. But so you love that. But she dialed in and is faithfully there, ready, positioned to support. And there's nobody that supports you, whether you're on the platform or as I was with her this week, or if you're in a business, then have Alice Alvey in with you because she's just so good. Alice, how you doing there?
Hey, Dave.
So much fun to be in. So much fun. It was so much fun doing that presentation.
It was fun. That was, folks, you have to come up to the Michigan Mortgage Lenders event where we're going to present that again on beautiful Mackinac Island. So if you've said, I've always wanted to go there, now's your chance to go. And that's the first week of August. And, yeah, it'll be fun. We did the rant and the sales and operations discussion back and forth on compliance over sales. I think you won.
I don't know. It was 50-50. It was a fun rant. We went back both back and forth, and we literally, and then we gave a really serious hand. I mean, some real practical walkaway stuff. So a special thanks to Al Thorpe and the whole group there at Indiana State Mortgage Bankers Conference. It's great to see all of you there, and thank you so much. So many people, Alice, walked out to both of us saying that they're regular listeners of the broadcast. It was really fun. Fun to connect with our people, our listeners, in person. So what you got? What's on the legislative front?
Well, you know, I've been watching the comments getting posted on our rights to cure that has been in the comment stage now at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. I'll talk about them speaking in a minute. But this, so now you have the American Bankers Association, the Mortgage Bankers Association, of course, Center for Responsible Lending, and everybody else is from both sides of the all sides of the spectrum of interest on this have now posted, and there's still only 40 comments, which I find amazing because, to me, getting a cost to cure as a lender is a really big deal. I'm still going to say to the lenders out there who haven't responded, go take a look at it, or at least say ditto to the MBA or the ADA, whoever, you know, just go out there.
Be heard.
I mean, because when you get into the weeds, here's a critical thing. One of the things we want to make sure is that if the cost to cure is identified by the borrower, we still want to have this option, right? Think about the fact that maybe I get 120 and 180 days, and the loan that has the mistake on it didn't get selected for QC, and somehow there was some mistake that we missed, and the borrower picks it up because they've just taken it to their lawyer. And we want to be able to have the ability that whoever catches the mistake, we get to, that this cost to cure can apply. That, to me, is one of the biggest things. You know, 120, 180 days, we'll live with it. We really would like 180. So I think that's the biggest one. And that's where we're different. The consumer groups are saying, no way, we want the borrower to still be holding a heavy stick, because I think you can get into a battle 3 months after closing on who said what first, right? You get the customer going, no, I emailed you. I told you I found this error. You must have missed my email. Now you're in a battle just over who found it first. You know, with the error, and whether you even get the cost to cure to apply to you. So I'm hoping the CFPB will land with, you know, whoever finds it, but it's going to take a lot of voices out there. The good faith requirement is something that we, you know, we already know what a good faith attempt is through QM. Let's try and defend that again. But the consumer groups have a lot of items they want excluded, you know, except for loan amount errors, except for this, except for that. And you can read their comments to be able to see where they want lots of exceptions to this, whereas the rule was written very straight up. If you find an error, you can go ahead and correct it. I mean, consumer groups have even mentioned, except for if the borrower is already in default. We're like, well, you mean to tell me I've got to give someone who's an EPD an exception to curing a $150 problem? So I can't stress enough, you know, technically, as we've said, the comment period for this particular part closed, but the rule itself is still accepting posts, because other parts of the rule are open for another week. You have till July 7th. I say go in, hit them with it. Get out there and comment. And on that same line with the CFPB, you know, they did publish what their rule list is for this year. We know we're going to get hummed up. They have not issued that ruling yet, and we are hearing that that's supposed to be coming up in the next couple of months. certainly then it won't even be effective until, you know, 2016. They're going to have to I guess it's possible they pull a rabbit out of their hat and say, hey, we gave this to you 3 months, start figuring out for 2015 data, which is your 2016 filing. But they would have to come out with it pretty quick for that to be reasonable. Another quick note just on debt collection rules. CFPB, interestingly enough, said that's their target. That's their hot button. So it was a relief
yes.
to feel like that they weren't, you know, we're not, certainly
mortgage,
we're on their radar. Yeah.
We're now on one of the outer rings on the bullseye target. The bullseye is clearly identified as collection practices. And you know, that's a smart place to be because there's a lot of abuse there, serious
yeah.
amount of abuse.
Yep, so that was one of the kind of good news things when the CFPB spoke. One last quick thing about two things. The CFPB, when they spoke, we talked about this concept that you can't get anything in writing from them. If you have a question, you know, you post it over, you try and get a hold of somebody. The gentleman up there was the liaison, this communication liaison who guides you through to getting answers. He was touting about how many companies that they've helped, you know, and the audience got a little tense. I was interested.
Yeah.
He got put on the hot seat there because people are going, I submitted a question and I'm waiting months. I still don't have an answer. But we did get this. If you do get a verbal from CFPB on an interpretive item like a fee to include or exclude from your points and fees test, record the conversation, record who you talk to. They do keep a log. So if you're in an audit
yes.
and you have to say, I spoke to so-and-so on this day and they said this was okay, they will be able to validate on the log you did talk to that person, and it will stand up in an audit is what he said. So I thought, all right, I'm going to be good at documenting every conversation with them, even though I know I won't get a confirmation in writing from them. Last but not least, it was great to see Brian Chappell again and hear him speak. He did a great job in giving us some Washington and FHA updates. So FHA is looking better. They obviously have their challenges, but their numbers are looking better, as we all know, with the MIP change. But as volume drops, it starts to be this problem in the balancing act. But there's a lot of good news about FHA in general. And as everybody kept talking about, keyword for 2014, enforcement, right?
Everybody enforcement, yep.
Enforcement, yep. So
and
that's my news
be
for today.
And that's the subject of our hot topic is, you know, what's going on in the enforcement area. So it's a real cute, good way to tee up what we got a little bit later on the broadcast. It was Dan Smith, who's the Assistant Director, Office of Financial Institution and Business Liaison. So Dan took on the impossible task, moved from Freddie Mac to join CFPB, has this task, and was, I got to tell you, that guy, he should go run for politics because he did a great job of, you know, taking on the heat, taking the questions, and putting it out there. And boy, I tell you, there was no softball questions. There's a few softball questions, but most of them were right on. And he did a good job. I thought he did good. In fact, we're trying to get him. I ran up to him afterwards, and I asked him to come on the radio. He said it'd probably be difficult because it's a radio program, but they're working to get this. Are you ready? Richard Cordray to come on this broadcast. So that'd be pretty cool. Awesome.
That would be great.
We're looking forward to that. So anyway, we're getting attention. They listen to the broadcast. CFPB listens. So for the listeners out there at CFPB, please tell Director Cordray, I'd love to have him on here. It's great to have you on, Alice. It's so much fun to speak with you. Every time we go out in the field, it's always a blast. And it's also, you are just the knowledge you have is just so outstanding. If you want to get a hold of Alice, her email address is alice.alvey, A-L-V-E-Y, at Indicomp. Indecomm.net, or check them out at their website, www.mortgageu.com. Good to be with you. We've got Tony Garitano coming up right after the break, and then Sam Garcia, and then we've got the Hot Topic segment, so stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin'.
Good to have you with us. Are we having fun yet, folks? I don't know. I sure have fun doing this broadcast. I appreciate all the comments. Another big event that took place this last week was the MISMO conference. And we have Tony Garitano, who is our technology, resident technology expert for the entire industry, on the line. So, Tony, I've got a couple quick questions for you. By the way, it's good to have you here with us. Always fun, Tony.
Thank you, Dave. Good to be here.
Yeah. So why should lenders push their vendors to adopt the latest MISMO version?
Well, I mean, you heard me talk about this a few weeks ago around the new disclosure regulations that are happening in August. And it's probably going to be something that the industry discusses a lot over the next few months, myself included, because it is very important, in my opinion, to press your LOS and your doc prep to embrace the latest version of MISMO, not version 2.6, but version 3.2 or higher. That is important.
There's also a version 3.3 now. Is that, did that come as announced at the conference?
Yes. Yes. 3.2, I would say, is the minimum version that people should look at. 3.3 is the most recent version. So, you know, that's really where your vendors need to be, because what's going to happen is eventually the GSEs and I'm sure CFPB as well is going to mandate the use of 3.3. They have not done so yet.
Yeah.
But that's the direction that they're going. That's the direction that the industry is going. And instead of playing catch-up, you need to make sure that your vendors are already there. On the appraisal side, Dave.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, yeah, appraisal side.
On the appraisal side, when we had the UAD, Universal Appraisal Data Set, under UMDP, the Unified Mortgage Data Set, ruled by FHFA.
Sorry, Tony, I lost you. Keep going. I'll be back. I'm just took a little pause on my technology on my side. Keep going. Alice, you may have to jump in. Sorry.
The point I wanted to make, Dave, was that on the appraisal side, a lot of appraisal vendors started out with version 2.6.
Yes.
That rule came into being, and eventually you're seeing them all migrate to 3.2 and 3.3. And that's what's going to happen across the entire industry over time. So if I'm a lender, I really want my vendor to be there already. I don't want my vendor to be playing catch-up.
So what if, I mean, so the argument say, well, why not wait for version 3.4? 3.2 came out, it came and went, now 3.3. Why not just wait a version? I mean, these vendors have got a horrific task on staying top of all these deals. So what's so great about 3.3 again, real quickly?
Well, the vendors do have a Herculean task, but it's the vendor's responsibility to keep lenders updated, so they really should be current. But I'm going to read you these two paragraphs, not from me, because I talk about this all the time, but from someone else in the industry. And this is how they describe it, because I think they did a really good job in describing version 3.2 and everything that comes after that. They say, MISMO standards for version 3.2 are made up of two key components. Number one, the logical data dictionary, and the version 3.2 reference model. The logical data dictionary provides the data terms and their business definitions, while the reference model defines how all those terms connect with each other consistently. In version 2.6, the dictionary does exist, but there wasn't a single reference model. And I'm reading that from a vendor's website, Dave, because I think that that was probably the best way that I've ever heard it described, even though I write about it myself all the time. But that makes it so plain and so easy to understand. And I think that lenders need to start being a little bit more forceful and holding their vendors to the fire, because this is the way the industry is going. It's going to be mandated eventually. And vendors should be, using the latest version of Nismo,
yep,
because that's where everything is going to be.
If you need to get a hold of Tony, you want more information, someone just shot me a note and say, how can I get a hold of Tony? Call him at 203-529-3131, 203-529-3131, or email him at Tony, with a T-O-N-Y, at progressinlending.com. Tony will walk you through it and give you a lot more information on this. Tony, you're just such a valuable resource on all this stuff. And there's like Alice and Joe. I mean, you just need a team. You need the right team surrounded you to keep you up to date. And we're just thrilled that you join us on the broadcast each and every week. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
You betcha, bud. Talk to you soon. Stay in touch. See you back
here
next week, hopefully. You bet. Bye. Folks, we've got Sam Garcia on the line. We've got just a quick update from him on what some of the other items are, and then we're going to get into our hot topic. Sam, good to have you with us on the broadcast here. And I keep telling everybody about your data. I mentioned again when I had my breakout session of just how valuable your Mortgage Daily data is. But you also got some great stuff, and I've got your website up here. Talk to us real quickly here. Give us an update.
A lot of
banks in trouble.
Yeah, I think you and I were talking a little earlier that we saw that one company that is a bank holding company had two of its subsidiaries go out of business on Friday, one in Illinois, one in Florida. So they both had a couple of orders issued against them, and also the parent company had entered an agreement with the Federal Reserve. So it wasn't totally unforeseen. But, it's a little bit of an uptick in an otherwise pretty slow year for bank failures.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a amount of stuff. There's also a lot of great information on here. The B of A seeking high-level meeting with the U.S. It's kind of like, can we stop the bleeding here at the legal fees that the B of A is checking out? It's just terrific. That's a great article. I went through that and looked at that. And then, again, just across the board here, a lot of great information. Of all the stories that are here, what's the one that you say readers really need to, your listeners really need to dial into this one story? What's the one that you'd say, they're all great, they're all important, but which one would you say is the most important one on here?
Well, in the last week we heard both from Freddie Mac and Mortgage Bankers Association that they're cutting their forecast for purchase originations this year and next year. Even though refinances didn't really get hit too bad in this last report. So, you always keep your ear open when you hear something like that, because that's really where everybody's looking to make the recovery, and that doesn't provide too much optimism. But that's really, I think, probably that caught my eye the most out of everything we've covered.
Well, I think it's really significant. I was talking to an analyst on Friday, and I missed that information. I had been traveling last week, and I missed missed getting online and taking a look at that. I wished I had. I mean, folks, if you really want to stay up on top of these things, it's like what Paul has over at IMF News and what Sam has here at Mortgage News. I mean, it's a really great complement of information in the stories you cover, Sam. It's really, really, really good stuff. But the one that's the one that it's on your website today that really caught my attention is Mortgage Bankers once again cut the purchase forecast. Wow. That is there. Also, let's talk on some of the data just to give a flavor of what data is out there for people to look at.
Well, we took that information and we put it into tables, and we've got it, by year, next year, this year, last year, and going back to 2000 on most of them for origination data, for refinance production, refinance share, a lot of market share information, a lot of information on, closing times, the number of people in the business, that kind of stuff.
Well, every time I speak, I use your website for getting the data, and I give you the credit for the platform. So I mentioned you again in my breakout session. You do a great job, Sam. We appreciate you so much being here with us. If you need to get a hold of Sam, get signed up, call their office number at 214-521-1300, or check out their website at www.mortgagedaily.com, or email samgarcia@mortgagedaily.com. Sam, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave, and keep up the great work.
Oh, I appreciate you, man. You do the same. Always fun to have you here, man. Such a good deal.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, folks, we're going to get right into the hot topic. Normally we would get into an ad, and if Profit Doctor's gone, but I want to just say a big thank you to Optimal Blue Secondary Marketing Interactive Services. Check them out if you have not already. Check them out. They're excellent to have for just all the information they provide. And they do pump out some good information. That's just kind of what's going on in the market. It's published. But I want to bring on the phone line right now an old friend, Glenn Corso, and as well as a new friend, someone that we're just getting to know, is James Brody. Glenn, well, someone has a – sounds like I'm getting some feedback. So whoever – I just turned on Glenn or James's mic, so whichever one, I'm picking up some feedback from it. I'm hearing myself in it. So if you have the broadcast playing in the background, please mute or somehow eliminate that background. All right, Glenn, let's get into it. It's good to have you here. 35 years of the legal and regulatory components of this industry. You have mortgage banking and mortgage insurance industry expertise. I met you, gosh, 35 years ago at the MBA when you were there, and it's a long, long time. We've been friends for a long time. Very, very good.
Yeah, well, we certainly have. So, Dave, thank you so much for having me on the program. I really appreciate it. And,
well, it's
Dave,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was going to tell you what I'm doing right now. So just a few weeks ago, I became executive director of the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. It's a trade association based in D.C., and we represent mid-size and small lenders, both mortgage banking companies as well as community banks that do mortgage lending. We have about 100 companies in the group.
Good. Well, I think one of the things I think there's a lot of people ask questions. Do we need another trade association? And the reality is when you have an organization as big as the MBA trying to cover all aspects of the industry as much as they do, it really becomes they've got so many divided interests. And if you're really folks looking for someone that just zeroes in on your interests, check out the website. What's the website for your place, for your association?
It's www.thecmla.com.
Well, let's introduce your panel. In fact, I'll let you do it. And James is a managing member of the American Mortgage Law Group. He's located out in Southern Cal or Northern California, I think.
That's correct.
James, is that right, James? Well, you cover a broad range of mortgage banking mitigation litigation issues with a broad, diverse clientele of most of the industry participants. And then also, I understand your experience centers around loan originations, the purchase and loan sales, that means loan securitization. So it's the full gamut, James.
Sure. No, and again, just to echo Glenn, I really appreciate you having me on the line today. You know, as far as the American Mortgage Law Group, we've been in and around for about 8 years, and, you know, a bulk of our business really came about at the outset of the meltdown. And, you know, we had been representing many lenders in pursuing a lot of the third parties who had caused these buybacks. I mean, the buybacks have always been around, but they had really become an issue at that point. And then once the third-party money dried up, obviously, that's when all the problems began between the correspondents and the investors and aggregators. So between litigation and non-litigation, we have represented hundreds of lenders and have a pretty large list of clientele at this moment in a lot of these very hot disputes ranging from the RFC cases up to otherwise. But given the fact that we are a boutique firm, maybe one of the largest boutique firms in the country, in this space, we felt the need, and obviously there's a huge need right now on the compliance end. There's a number of firms and companies out there that are doing it, but obviously the need and the desire is you know, non-exhaustive at this moment. So we have, the last couple of years.
No question there's an immense amount of work out there. Let's get into looking with the time and a clock here. I want to get into some of the things about the new rules that have been implemented. And we are starting to see evidence that lenders are relaxing their post-implementation, and this can't be smart. So one of the first questions I want to throw out to you two is, what are you seeing out there? Is it what we're hearing that an increasing number of state regulators are conducting examinations, and they're focusing specifically on the new implementation?
Well, absolutely. I mean, right now, you know, I think that there was so much buildup to the implementation that once it actually happened, I think a lot of people sort of relaxed their efforts to a certain extent. But right now is the least of the times that you want to relax, and you actually want to make sure that you are doing everything and anything possible so that you are prepared when those auditors come in, when there's teams that come in, because they are having an eye to doing this, and they are going out in full force. And the last thing you want to do is be unprepared. And when the auditors do come in, those examiners come in, the first thing that they're going to be looking at is what you have done to comply. And in the event they do not see the efforts to make those implementations, you could end up with a consent order. Whereas, you know, right now, because we're in kind of a honeymoon phase, if they do see a true effort to be compliant, they are more prone to making sure that you go ahead and take corrective action before they issue their final reports, which will be infinitely better for us.
Yeah, let's clarify something. A lot of people don't understand what a consent order is. It sounds like legal talk to some of our listeners. So when you say they're subject to a consent order, what does that mean?
Well, obviously, you know, once you go ahead that is going to be a public document listing out the problems that were associated with that audit. And, you know, because there's a memorandum of understanding between the various states, what you really need to be concerned about is a waterfall effect. If you are found lacking in one of your examinations, that could very easily translate into the other examiners in the other states.
Yep.
And cause you a myriad or a domino effect of problems that you are going to have to deal with. So you need to head that off in any way possible. And the amount of money and effort you put into the compliance and getting ready is going to pay off in spades if and when those examinations do come.
Well,
right, and Dave, let me...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to interject. Yeah. That's exactly what we've been hearing from the members in our group. That number one, preparation really pays off a great deal. And then number two, what they've been seeing is kind of serial examinations. By that I mean that if you are licensed in, let's say, 8 states, it's not unusual for you to get hit with an examination request from the first state, and then a few weeks later, state number two rolls in asking for all the same information, going over all the same territory. So that's going to be a real issue going forward for mortgage bankers that are doing business in more than one state.
And, you know, just to add on to what Glenn is saying, you know, it's on the NMLS after it's formalized, which basically means that it's now going to, again, be public for, you know, everyone to see what errors you have.
Well, that opens the door for the plaintiff bar to come in and start taking their shots at you from a legal standpoint. Alice, this sounds like a nightmare. And you know, you work with so many clients out there, but I'm going to toss the mic over to you.
Well, yeah, it is, because obviously as you bring in all the different states, they may have that one hot button that they spotted, but then each of the states have their own way of, you know, enforcing things. So what specific issues are the examiners focusing on when they get out there? Can you share with some of the listeners to have some heads up? Because the CFPB and other auditors, they can't say, well, here's what we cited somebody for, unless it's in a consent order, unless it goes that far. So what are you saying the examiners are focusing on?
Well, you know, as far as the examinations, you know, they're really looking at the new implementation, you know, both with, you know, QM, but it really varies from state to state. I mean, there is no one uniform part that they are examining. It's really the whole gamut. So if you asked a lender in, you know, one state and a lender in another state, they may say that there are different things that are being focused on at this time. But really what you want to do is make sure that you are prepared for that implementation, that you have made the implementation. And if you do that, I think that you are going to be in good shape. But there have been a lot of lenders and a lot of clients that have really been focusing on this compensation. And I think that the issue really needs to be that you need to not only take that into account, but you really need to look at all the other, you know, regulations that have been implemented right now in which they could be auditing you on.
Right. Alice, I'll just chime in and say that what we've heard from the members in our group is definitely a focus on loan officer compensation issues. And as I'm sure all of your listeners know, there are plenty of ambiguity still in those regulations, so that unfortunately the examiners, when they look at it, if there's an ambiguous issue there, then you can have slightly different interpretations, which is causing quite a few headaches.
Yeah, the LO comp is a challenge. I mean, you can't stress enough how, you know, if you try and walk a thin line on that one, you've probably crossed it, because there's really not a thin line that you want to be very close to. So are they testing
That's
the points
so
and fees test on the closed loans? Do you see this, any news on that front yet, or any challenges we should watch out for?
Well, you know, I mean, just really to start off, the examiners are coming in, and it's really a twofold analysis. You know, first, they're going to go ahead and ask for your policies and procedures to see how the regulations are being addressed in the SOP, or the standard operating procedures. You know, however, what we're also finding is that some regulators are conducting their own calculations on the closed loan files that they review, and really in order to ensure compliance verifications that the lender use are issuing correct findings. And let's see, you know, as far as, you know, what else they are looking for, they're really looking for the disclosures. For example, the home ownership counseling disclosure language in the disclosures. They're also asking about the policies and procedures, again, for that new language to ensure it's included. And for, I guess, the ATR, you know, less points and fees tests, but really more general ATR information.
Hello?
I'm here. I think we may have lost. Joe, James is still on there. Go ahead. James, did you we lose you, or did we?
No. I think, you know, again, you
okay.
know, right now, you know, the examiners that are coming in are really starting off with the concept of getting your policies and procedures and really running through those to make sure that you have everything in place that you need to. So they're having a really keen eye, though, on how the lenders you know, are training their employees on the new processes. We've actually seen a significant uptick in examiners requesting training logs to see if the companies are actually mm-hmm. taking the time to not only update their policies and procedure documents.
We talked about that, Alice. We talked
yeah.
about that at the conference. I mean, the importance of having training logs, that's really good. That's a significant,
well,
it's a great mitigate.
I have a quick question on this one, and
yeah.
I don't know whether it's for James or for Glenn, but the we had a customer recently give us their policy document, and it was 4 pages. And they did not want to change it. They're saying, so we are in compliance with the Truth in Lending Act, and we follow all rules in TILA. And then the next sentence is, we follow all rules in RESPA. Well, there's no way. They go, and they were adamant that they said one of their regulators was taking this, or that Fannie and Freddie have taken this. And this is a bank, but I was floored.
Well, I think it's not a big surprise to say that I would expect a little more than 4 pages.
Right.
You know, investors are also coming in right now, and they are specifically looking at testing the points and fees as well. You know, that's really what we're seeing both on the investors and the aggregators coming in versus the state examiners.
Right, and some of our members are also talking about an uptick in their warehouse banks sending in teams as well, because of course the banks are all under pressure to be doing all of this work on their counterparties where they have counterparty risk with companies. And so our members are saying, boy, all of a sudden their warehouse bank is sending in a team of examiners as well, and they've been seeing that quite a bit more than they had in the past.
Interesting. Joe, let's get you in on the
yeah.
discussion here. I know you got a couple questions.
Well, I wanted to ask about new stuff. We seems like we hadn't had a lot of new regulatory rules come out here just in the last few months. Are there any new major rules that we need to be aware of that we need to be, you know, preparing for?
Well, I mean, I think that pretty much everyone has on their radar, you know, the main issues that are out there. It's just making sure that they go ahead and they ensure the compliance, that they are backing up and revising those policies and procedures, that they are doing those logs, that they are training their staff, and that when they come in, the examiners come in, or the investors come in, or the warehouse banks come in, that they are really ready to go. And I don't think there's anything new, except for maybe if you want to talk about the VA. And the VA had now issued its own QM rule. So that probably, as far as I am aware, may be the newest. You know, in some, you know, the general QM rules provide for a temporary QM status for all the loans eligible for purchase or insurance by the GSEs or agencies, at least until those GSEs or agencies have issued their own rules. Well, on May 9th, the VA issued its final interim rule on QM ATR, and interestingly, the rule took effect immediately upon issuance on May 9th. Now, the rule renders most loans that are insured by the VA as safe harbor QM loans, with the exclusion of a small subset of IRLs, and that's, those would be mainly those
of
falling
what?
In certain... I'm sorry?
Of what?
Yeah, just
IRL.
Yeah.
What's an IRL?
Well, an IRL is a type of loan, mainly refi, and it really falls within a certain income requirement for which have been refinanced within the last 6 months.
Well, and that is a big change, I think, that everybody, I hope everybody caught, good old IRL there, interest rate reduction refinances, but that you now have to make sure you
another
pass.
Another acronym. Yeah.
I know. So we have 36 months that the customer recoups that. And, folks, I've seen a lot of software systems that aren't calculating that right, or the originator didn't enter it right in order for it to calculate it right. And I think that's a big deal that you have to watch for a maximum recoup, because lenders have not had to watch for that before. That's a brand-new procedure to make sure you put in place.
Yeah, and the enforcement really begins on those as of June 1st.
Correct, yeah. Well, that's interesting. Oh, so anything on, what are your thoughts as we kind of move forward to our integrated disclosures that we're going to have next year? It felt like at our Indiana conference, companies are just starting to get really nervous about it as they start to see how much work there is to do. So
yes,
what are your lenders feeling now? Are they preparing for it?
Well, yeah.
So
let
me start off. I think our lenders are starting to prepare for it, but unfortunately, I think everybody has a mindset that since it isn't really effective until August of next year, that they have lots of time to prepare for it. And in one sense they do, but in another sense, they really don't have a great deal of time. The other thing that people are starting to focus on now, though, is the fact that you have to have that document in the borrower's hands 3 days before the closing. And I think everybody's just starting to absorb the fact that that's really a huge change in the way the industry does business right now. And it could cause some problems. It could cause some very serious problems. And people are trying to come to grips with, okay, how are we going to deal with this? How are we going to change our processes and procedures to deal with the fact that now, in essence, we have a cutoff that is 1 or 2 business days before we're used to delivering that document?
Yeah, I think echoing on to what Glenn was saying, as far as our clients, it's really not on the radar for most of them yet. And I think that they're waiting for more until the end of the year, again, waiting for doc prep companies and vendors to really do it for them.
There is no question that there's just so much to stay on top of on all of this. Glenn, kind of departing from some of the things we were going to try to get on, I really want to get a flavor of what you're hearing. For our listeners, we have so many independent mortgage bankers. What are you really hearing from within your constituency, within your members, about some of the hottest issues that they're facing? And give us a little insights on how you're dealing with it as we wrap up the broadcast here.
Well, let me start, and I'll just make it very brief. The big thing we're hearing from our members right now is the increase in the cost of compliance. And, of course, they're grappling with that at the same time. As everybody knows, origination volumes are down quite a bit. And the mid-size and smaller lenders that we work with really don't have as big a base to spread those costs over. And so the drop in income combined with the jump in compliance costs is really putting the squeeze on them.
That's really amazing. It's not surprising. Alice and I see this all the time across the board. And then Joe reports on the squeeze in the margin, so it's really fascinating to do that. So, Glenn, how can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more about you? And then I'm going to come back at you. I'm going to come back to James in just a minute.
So my email, Dave, is gcorso, C-O-R-S-O, at thecmla.com.
Good. And a phone number they can reach you at?
Area code 703-467-0420.
Excellent. James, how can people get a hold of you? You sound like you've got a lot of experience in a lot of these issues.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, if people would like to get a hold of me, they're welcome to call my office at area code 415-878-0030, and then just ask for myself, James Brody. Otherwise, they can email me at jbrody, J-B-R-O-D-Y, at AmericanMLG.com. And, you know, just one final note I wanted to go ahead and throw out there. You know, I think that just sort of to conclude here, a lot of our clients are really wanting to try to get these implemented, and to the extent they can afford it, they want to test it. And so I think that really is right now what a lot of lenders would like to see done. They're not trying to skirt these rules when they call us. They're seeing how they can implement it. And the other thing is that a lot of the lenders and a lot of our clients have had questions specifically about attorney-client privilege in getting ready for these tests. And I think whoever they use, whether it's an attorney or whether it's an outside company, I think that that is an issue that needs to be addressed at the very forefront when they are going ahead and getting their advice and doing these tests.
Good information. Appreciate you both being here with us. And say to our listeners, be sure to get a hold of Glenn and James. Great resources to the industry, and we're pleased to have had you on the broadcast. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. We really appreciate
it. Thank you. Yep.
You betcha. Joe Farm, looking at the markets here, looking at there, looks like we have seen them just dip down a little bit in the negative. And just as we close out the broadcast, give us a quick update
on
the market.
Be on the lookout. Yeah, any further drop, we've been at the same level now for the show. Further drop could result in unfavorable price changes.
Appreciate you all being here. Thank you, Alice and Joe, being here with us for the broadcast, folks. We're looking forward to seeing you back here next week. We've got Larry Wingdit. He's a published author, and I really like this guy. He's not in the mortgage industry, and we're starting to reach outside of the mortgage industry to get more people to come into the broadcast, and I think you're going to enjoy it. It should be very entertaining. He is a colorful character, so I'm looking forward to that interview. Great to have you with us. Look forward to having you back next week, everyone. Have a great week.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.